Around the NFL Podcast is the highest paid on the San Diego Greybeards.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
A reminder to the listeners of the show, loyal listeners, that this is streaming live this Thursday show. Every Thursday at NFL.com and also on YouTube. Did I nail that, Ricky?
You killed it.
You can find it later on YouTube if you miss it.
Yes, and if you...
Yep. Or on .com if you want to watch the full thing.
Or on .com. So just remember...
I like YouTube because then you can see the numbers. They keep track of it.
And the comments are so funny.
Are they?
They're
simply
so
a
bad.
Much more not effective platform than NFL.com.
So they're all,
sorry,
be like,
they're both great.
They'll be like, Cam Newton died. Cam Newton died. And then people will be like, what? Are you serious? There's like little trolls. It's so great.
To be clear, this is a news program. Cam Newton is doing great. He's back at practice.
Well, he's not doing great, but he's certainly alive.
Not dead.
He's his not career, passed. Perhaps. No, that's even too strong. But it is at a time of transition. Cam Newton at the crossroads. Breaking news. What is that, real breaking news?
Cam Newton is alive.
Good to know.
Don't say that this isn't a news show, first and foremost.
Or a news show that will generate its own news. There was nothing new there at all, just fibs and corrected fibs.
So, yes, a reminder that next week, if you want to watch us live, you could do so. Or you could even do the move. No, you can't do that. See, now I'm getting wrapped. It's all getting wrapped up.
You can do it Sunday night. You can do it Sunday night. It starts right after Sunday Night Football ends.
Right.
Our recap show.
But I had the idea of you could stream it on YouTube, give us the numbers, and then listen, which you certainly could do, but you can't do that live.
You better be hitting both platforms. But here's an idea, because, Dan, you and I will be covering a scintillating Vikings-Redskins game later this evening. Someone could listen to that and then dive right into the YouTube and audio version of the show directly after.
Speaking of the garage, Mark and I, after we do the Thursday night slammer between the Redskins and Vikings, Mark's staying in the garage, and my bosom buddy, Bobby Castrone, we are going to do a throwback podcast where Mark talks about the songs of his love life prior to meeting his wife and goes through each of them in exhausting detail, and I'm sure it's going to be... really a journey through your heart.
A little nervous.
So check that out. That will be up tomorrow. Shameless plug. All right, now.
Sounds exhausting.
I can't wait. I saw a list of the songs.
Emotional.
It is. Oh, what a journey it will be.
It's like going back through your personal attic for a while.
I'm a little concerned. I have not really thought
Sessler,
this out.
That's a Sessler move. He likes going through the old pictures and things like that.
Well, Greg, I actually existed before age 35, so there are pictures, videos, and thoughts to...
Nothing's
ponder.
Better than Camp Jewel. When Mark has a couple wines and the Instagram gets fired up and you start seeing about the camp from 92, that's my favorite Sessler.
I'm giving at least six or seven people what they're asking for.
And we're going to get to the games, all of the week, eight games coming up, and we're going to talk about 14 of them today and, of course, do it draft style. But one other note, I want to say thank you to everyone on the subreddit. I did an AMA yesterday and got hundreds and hundreds of questions, and that subreddit is up to over 12,000 people now. So if you're a fan of the show and you want a place to meet and talk about the show, go to the Around the NFL on Reddit.
But you did a good job with that. I filed a question that you actually even responded to.
I did. It was something about you being hot or something. I couldn't.
No. It's just like, how do you get more time with Mark alone on the show? Like, if you're a listener, one on one time.
And I highly
under
suggest
an alias.
Greeby, who does an amazing job, cultivating that site. Gentlemen, I invite you to interface with the fans yourselves at some point.
I think three of the four of us have done an AMA.
I've done several of them.
No, okay, well, F me. All right.
Well, no, I mean, you are one of the three. Greg has yet to dip into those waters.
Come on. I would do a Reddit. I would
it's a little too intimate.
I would
sure.
do a Reddit.
That's what I would do. I would do a Reddit.
Then I'll do a tweet.
You know, Ricky.
I thought you were asking to like post on our own message boards. That feels like a little desperate or something. But I like the doing an AMA.
Ricky, our former producer, La Cid, who I miss her every day. She's just awesome. But that's not the point. Point is, she once did an AMA.
You're so lucky this is live.
Around the NFL subreddit. And you should do one, too. I feel like that would be
That's right up your alley.
They blocked you.
Fun.
Yeah.
No. No way. Oh, they'd be like, why do you stink at producing? And I'd be like, no.
No, you
it's
would
a
love
very
it.
Small subset.
You would love it.
Planners.
All right. Here we go. Let's get into
why
it.
Why don't you have Sid do it?
You knew it was going
to be back.
All right. Doing it draft style. And Wes, I double checked. I wanted to make sure Wes doesn't get banged on the order, that he gets, you know, the correct number of picks. And as I look at it,
I should be second this week.
You are second this week, but picking first.
Which probably means last as well for some reason.
No. You know?
No, that's not true. Picking first is Greg Rosenthal. Rosie, as some call you, but I never have. You get it going.
In college, that's all people knew me as. I dated a girl who thought my real name was Rosie after 2 weeks. I was like, give me
How does she
break.
Not know that's a nickname?
Yeah, that's, you know.
Well, she wasn't all there.
She thought your name was Rosie Rosenthal?
Right, the whole
Rosie.
Thing, it was troubling.
Like Rosie
As
Greer?
It would be if I didn't get this game, so I'm thrilled that I have the number one pick to take Browns, Patriots, Tony Romo, 425, and it's all fine because, you know, there's only three left.
Oh, and by the way, that is also the Road to Victory presented by the United States Marine Corps.
It is. That's a segment we've added, a team that needs to go on the road and win. And I don't think it's quite as tall a mountain as people believe it to be, because I think the Browns have the capability to be explosive. Could they do it for the next 7 or 8 weeks and kind of solve their problems and be consistent? That I have more doubts about. Can they have a spike game where coming off a bye week, they come up with some answers and give the Patriots defense some legitimate problems and keep it close and give the Patriots offense problems too with the defense? It's been pretty good. I think this is going to be a great game, and I'm glad I got it number one.
Mark, where do you stand on this? Because Greg is technically a Patriots fan.
It's not technically
did
about
you think,
it.
Did you think this was going to be there for you? At,
no,
pick
we you know, talked Greg about and it. Yeah, time. Greg and I will be appearing on the Tomahawk Show after, and we both must zero in on this. So
there's only
just
three late games. We decided one of us needs to get
right.
There.
That's good. So you talked it out. There's no double cross.
There's no issues here. No grudge developing.
It whiffed of a double cross initially.
No,
I'm not going to allow that to become a narrative. But Greg and I, we executed as we needed to.
Right.
Now, can the Browns do that? I appreciate your optimism. But I cannot think of one thing, and I'm not trying to just take a shot at the Browns. They're a team in development. I cannot think of one thing that they do on field or from a coaching perspective better than New England, even on a short week.
They
can
create
can't.
Explosive plays. And so I think the Patriots use man defense more than any team in the league. What's the vulnerability to that? It's certainly if you can get over the top, if you can make big plays against them, you're going to have Odell Beckham, you're going to have, you know, Nick Chubb sometimes in the running game making explosive plays. You're going to have Jarvis Landry in one-on-one situations. I at least think they can give this defense more problems, in theory, than any offense they've placed.
Greg, yeah. The skill players of the Browns are way superior to that of the Jets. But one of the big problems and one of the huge failures in the Jets' embarrassment on Monday night was they did not adjust, that they didn't really have time to get into the type of downfield passing patterns, because the zero blitz that is apparently revolutionary and is going to go down as like the 46 defense of this era simply doesn't allow that. And if they –
I think
it makes
Baker
me
and
wonder,
Odell Beckham because, and Jarvis Landry can adjust better and get
But it's not
ball.
About them. It's well, maybe they break off their routes. But I mean in terms of can this offensive line, can Baker Mayfield, a quarterback who – he's not getting caught on mic, but he's looked like he's been seeing ghosts at times this year as well. Can they handle the surge that is sure to come that took out the Jets and Sam Darnold? To me, that's what this game's about.
It is, and this is by far the most talented offense the Patriots have faced. As Greg said, they have faced some bottom barrel, some dregs, and now you got real talent. That doesn't mean that Jarvis Landry's walk-back guarantee is going to work. You know, he said we're going to go to New England and we're going to win. It's going to be that simple. We're going to win.
Don't do that.
Walked it back a little bit and said, you know, mostly it was just we're going there with the purpose of winning.
That's quite a walk
it's back. It's weird
thank
that
you
you're walking
thank
back.
Thank you for clarifying that.
That's the road to victory.
I mean, why not say you're going to win?
But I think go ahead.
But to me, the best chance for the Browns to win is with their defense –
Yes.
Pushing Tom Brady off his spot, making him move his feet, because as Dan has pointed out, as Mark has pointed out, he's not moving quite as well as he did 2 or 3 years ago. Still throwing well.
I think he's playing great considering the situation around him. Josh Gordon was placed on injured reserve this week. This game has a whole lot of Brown subplots with Jamie Collins and Jason McCourty playing extremely well. McCourty's ranked number 2 by PFF and at cornerbacks, and Collins has maybe been their most valuable player. But we should mention Gordon is out for the year, and yet Ian Rapoport's reporting he's going to be healthy in a week or two. He's probably going to get cut off injured reserve and land on a team like the Dolphins, who will claim him. And Ian hinted he hasn't been able to keep well conditioned. That's kind of
why would
reading
the Dolphins
between...
claim him?
Why not?
Why? What?
Well, some okay. team. Some
how
team
does he help? Or the Reds? Zero wins. Yeah.
Well, because if you're a veteran and you get cut after next week, you are you're open to waivers. And in some team with a bad record, whether it's the Falcons or the Redskins or the Jets, who knows?
I mean, back to this game. I think that you've got Cleveland has Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams at cornerback for the first time in about 1,000 years. They haven't had their full complement in the secondary all season. They are, by advanced metrics, about the 7th most imposing pass rush, although that's been very inconsistent. Every part of their team's been inconsistent. You can look at the personnel on offense, but I don't see a direct route for them to be any more convincing than a Jets team or a Bills team on offense, because they've been out of sync from wire to wire. Outside of some big plays in the Ravens win, this Browns team is about as concerning on offense in terms of not living up to their parts as you can find in the league right now.
I don't like this game for the Browns at all.
Well, I wouldn't like any team going against the Patriots, but
yeah.
If they lay an egg to the same degree that the Jets do, that's a major disappointment. It's not a shot at anyone else, they better show up.
I think good coaching staffs come off a bye week and they solve some things. They got to get OBJ going. They're averaging 8 yards per target to him. It's not all Baker Mayfield. The timing's been off. OBJ's had probably more passes that have hit him somewhere in the hands, or that he's had a chance to make a play and he hasn't made the play more than ever I've seen him before in his entire career.
And yet he's moving as well as ever.
Yeah,
he's just
that's what I mean.
I do
expect it to change at some point. But
Greg, I have a question
this week
for you about Patriots fandom.
Okay.
Do Patriots fans trust a team that has hit its stride so early in the season?
I don't think they've hit their stride. It's the worst offense that they've had in 15 years.
Right,
so I think that's how I look at it.
But it's a defense that is historically great and can't be expected to
I don't
to
trust
keep that
it because 2000 – no, because this part of the year as a Patriots fan, you realize it only has so much meaning. And they're going to go down defensively in terms of stats because they're going to play better teams. But they have the components that you do trust.
And what is New England?
It's nice. This reminds me of 2001, 2003. I mean, those teams were not great offensively either. It is great to see Belichick feeling himself as if he hadn't accomplished enough. I feel like this season, coming off that Super Bowl with his son as one of the key figures and his favorite player, Gerard Mayo, and his son and him are calling the defense the best defense they've had in over 15 years. I think he's loving it.
How heartwarming. By the way, it does smell of more loophole bonanza theater. You're allowed to put a guy in IR when he's healthy?
He's not healthy.
He was surprised to hear this, and he's going to be able to sign with the team and play as soon as.
Well, because you can shut them. You're losing the guy.
Teams do that all the time.
Right. In theory, it's more of a cost to the team because you'd be losing a healthy Josh Gordon.
They worked him out.
So why IR?
Well, because he has bonus all the time. They just deemed him not important enough to keep that spot.
He's taking up a roster.
His quote-unquote people say he's like a week or two away. He had two bone bruises on his knee, which happened earlier in the season. They worked him out. He wanted to play. There's some whispers his weight was up significantly.
So, Dan, if you are, say, player number 45 to 53 on the roster and you get injured, even if it's a one-week injury, you'll often end up on IR just because they don't have the roster space for you.
I'm sorry, it's fishy. And that was the road to victory presented
by
the United States Marine Corps.
Tough road.
Did we find a road there? I don't know. I felt like it was. We went right into the brush.
I don't know who the Marines are in that situation, the Browns or the Patriots. For the sake of our country, hope it's the New England Patriots.
All right, Wes, you were up with the number 2 pick in our draft.
The number 2 pick, and I'm going to workshop a couple of game titles here for you. A fork in the road game, nice. A sink or swim game. Both of these apply to Kyle Allen and the Panthers quarterback situation. Mm. He's starting. Cam is just about getting healthy, and you're going up against the best defensive line in football on the road in San Francisco, and I just have a feeling that Kyle Allen's going to lose his job because the 49ers defense is so good, so dominant, to the extent that I'm locking up the 49ers.
I had that in mind. I thought about that. That's nice. Like that lock. Because you need Kyle Allen to give you a plus performance to win this game, right? And that's not, asking a lot against this defense on the road.
You're not just going to be able to turn and hand it to Christian McCaffrey 35 times against this defense. You're going to have to make some plays in the passing game. And when Kyle Allen drops back over and over again, he doesn't always deal with pressure well, as we've seen by all the fumbles. I think we saw it last year in the regular season finale. He's not the best against pressure.
No, I was thinking of locking this up too, because I'm not going to pick against the 49ers until they play either a great veteran quarterback or a really good offensive line. Carolina has neither. I would say if Carolina has a weakness this year, it's been communication along that offensive line, teams sending blitzes and different packages where they don't know who to pick up. And then you got to play Nick Bosa and DeForest Buckner. This defensive line's so good, D Ford's a role player. They're only playing him 20 snaps a game because Arik Armstead is better than him, and Ford is lighting it up as a kind of a microwave off the bench. But Armstead's the Pro Bowler, and D Ford making $20 million a year. They traded all these picks for it's playing 25 snaps.
I mean, 49ers have allowed 10 points in 3 weeks. It's easy to forget a couple things because the Panthers, out of our world a week ago, they had drives fall apart against the Bucs. Their offense was not on fire for big chunks of the game against Tampa Bay when we were there watching it live in London. But then you've got a Niners team, and I know this happened in awful elements. Jimmy G had 10 yards passing against the Redskins in the first half last week. They're not a perfect offense from the quarterback position at all. I think that the Panthers can keep this close, but I will tell you one thing, because I like what happened last week where Wes and I rode arm in arm to lock victory. So I'm going to do the same exact thing 2 weeks in a row. Every week, no, but I'm going to do it 2 weeks in a row because I can't see another lock I like better.
And yeah, you know what? This is a pretty safe one.
I got the lock here. I was leaning hard one way, and now, you know what?
Join us.
Feeling good about this, and I want to get in on the party.
Join us.
So let's lock it up a third time.
Wow.
This has to be a lock with the least amount of dissension and prodding that you've ever had.
I came into the show figuring it was this one or another one, and I figured if Wes was taking it, then I wasn't going to bother, because it's like, what's at stake, really?
Well, there was another one on my list, too.
Well, I agree.
But the other one feels like a gimme if the starting quarterback isn't playing. So.
Mm. Oh, you got a little Falcons, anti-Falcons action going on.
No, I've got a little anti-Matt Moore action going on.
There is potential for a unique level way for us to all bond in the middle of a long season here. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Come along for the ride?
Sure. Let's
all right.
do it.
All right. A four-way lock on the Niners.
That's an Erica for you in terms of having to keep track of four different nonsensical locks throughout
she
a long show.
Track.
You're done.
Yeah, but I was told that we're not, you know, paying that off.
Oh.
Greg, can you look in the mirror on this?
That's not true. We paid off on Thursday.
Yeah.
And by the way, let me say the standings here.
I think the Panthers, for what it's worth, might be that, you know, they played the Steelers in week three. If there's a route for them to win, it's that the passing game for the 49ers has been a little inconsistent, and that this defense, especially the pass defense, is capable of making other quarterbacks look bad. That is their path, and they have a very creative running game. It's two of the most creative running games.
One thing about Kyle Shanahan that I've really liked is that even when Jimmy G's not on, he's running the ball every time. I mean, he's just going to keep running over and over again because he knows it complements his defense.
Post-ACL, he looks pretty darn athletic.
Just so everyone knows, through week seven, Sessler and Rosenthal at 4-3. The old Zeuser off the canvas, 2-5, two in a row. And Wes, of course, finally ended that historic slump, 1-6. And I feel like a heat check's coming on for Wes, a real hot streak.
Oh, you do? Thank you.
I feel it coming.
None of us are on fire.
All right. Pick three, the old Zeuser. This one's a good one. I like this one a lot because I have been all season waiting for the Philadelphia Eagles to take off, and they just haven't. They've been, frankly, I think the Browns in the AFC and the Eagles in the NFC to me are the two most disappointing teams in the league this year. And the Eagles are different than the Browns in that I thought the Eagles were a true Super Bowl contender. I thought the Browns could be a team that gets a lot better and goes to the playoffs. The Eagles, I thought, could be great this year, and in fact, they've been crummy, and especially the last 2 weeks. The last 2 weeks have been an abomination. They're in the middle of a three-game road trip, and the third game now takes them to Western New York to play the Bills, who we know how good they are in their building. We know how great their defense is. So this is going to be a really tough game for them. But the 2 weeks, the two games going into this, at Minnesota, 38-20, a total no-show. And we know Sunday night was a no-show, 37-10, where they could not have looked any worse. So everything seems to be going in a certain direction, and yet there's still a part of me that thinks the Eagles can pull it together. And I wouldn't call this a must-win game. I wouldn't call this a, what do we call it, underground game?
Essentially a dirt nap buried between 6 and 7 feet under the earth.
I still think it's too early to get that wrapped up. They're 3-4 right now. If they fall to 3-5, they're in trouble but not done. But they need to stop the bleeding here. And here come the Bills. So I'm kind of with Greg on the Bills, that I respect them, love their defense, love how they play in their building, although their only loss was at home against the Pats, but they're the only
team barely
that
beat the Bengals and Dolphins at home, or at least trailed in the fourth quarter to both those teams.
Feels like a long time ago.
Worth noting.
But they're the only team that gave the Patriots a game. So I want to see something from Josh Allen in this game, but I really do feel like the Eagles have a circle the wagons game against the Bills.
Do they have a quarterback they want to circle the wagons around? I don't know. This reminds me of last year when that big article came out with all of these offensive players in the Eagles questioning the quarterback, and he's coming off his worst game of the year.
Yes.
Before that game, I think most people would say he's been a top five quarterback this year, and yet Aguilar and Mac Hollins have been two of the worst receivers in the NFL, according to Pro Football Focus and the game film. Alshon Jeffrey and Zach Ertz are underperforming relative to last year. Neither one seems very happy. Lane Johnson's calling people out.
Jeffrey's the subject of a snitch report by a Philly reporter who said he was the source for Josina Anderson complaining about Carson Wentz.
These veterans just don't seem to warm up to him.
What's happening in Philly right now is what you see with like bad teams that are going down in a sinkhole. And I am also optimistic they can get it together. But here's another thing they did the last couple of weeks. They've released a player that they started on Sunday the following Monday, 2 weeks in a row. That is something that like bad teams are kind of due to
Zach
to
Brown
send a message.
And who else?
Zach Brown.
Releases.
And then last week it was Orlando Scandrick. If you're going to start him and play him 70 snaps in the game and you're benching your second round pick from a couple years ago, he wasn't even a healthy scratch. He was active and you wouldn't even let Sidney Jones off the bench because of another punitive benching. And then you cut him the next day. Something's weird there. I don't know.
Something is weird
They're
there.
Trying to clean up the locker room is what it sounds like.
I'm at the point where Sean McDermott, and we've been Sean McDermott fans ever since he visited the show and was an absolute delight when we were with him in the owners' meetings. But
you get a lot of mileage.
Beyond that, well, that was smart. That was a wise 10 minutes by that head coach. I think other head coaches should
consider
similar paths. But I trust him more than Doug Peterson right now, and I trust the way the Bills are run from head to toe. And though, at the same time, I feel like Josh Allen, who you look at a lot of metrics, is a bottom barrel quarterback, to your point, a bottom five quarterback in a lot of ways. I'm not giving up on him on any level because there's a lot to like if he can get some of it kind of hemmed in. But this is a game where I think he can generate some points. And from the Eagles side, and I think you mentioned it, Wes, that if this was an offense that hinged entirely around the return of DeSean Jackson, he will be back in this game. They were spicy. Well, that's what I read, that he's heading in that direction. They were spicy when they played the Redskins in week one in the second half when D-Jax was the deep threat for them. They have not had that with, Mac Hollins stepping into that role. They've missed that. And Nelson Agholor.
They've been really bad vertically. And
I mean, Nelson Agholor
can
complain all he
weakness.
Wants.
That's Wentz missed throws down the field last week. If he has a weakness, that's it.
Alshon Jeffrey can complain all he wants to whoever, but he looks like someone shotgun from the tight end position from 1984 to me. He's a big, gigantic, bulky receiver who gives no deep option to Wentz. What is around Wentz right now? When they were dominant and he was awesome and MVP level. They were destroying people with their ground game because they were getting up early and absolutely manhandling opponents down the stretch. They lost two straight games by 17 or more points because the secondary is a total leaky factory. They're an absolute disaster.
I preface this by saying that I think this is going to be a game, and it's just more the a feel than anything else. But what do the Eagles do well right now?
Not much. It really made me think. What Mark asked the question.
They infight.
Like, who
well.
Are they? Who is their identity? If they can't stop
they speak
the run,
to Justine Anderson. Well,
if they can't stop the run like they didn't last week, overall this year they have, and they're not strong up front, like on the offensive line. Then who are they? You're right. And DeSean Jackson, it doesn't look like he's expected to play. He has not been at practice either day this
triple
week.
Source.
Just
triple
to
source.
Wow, I read that incorrectly.
No, just to you know, just to put it out there.
One thing they do well, Dan, their quarterback is Superman when he gets help. He just hasn't gotten enough help.
Jordan Howard. There was a line in, I forget which writer, maybe it was Zach Berman in The Athletic, who said, you can make the case Jordan Howard is the only player on this team that's outperformed expectations. It's a bold statement.
All right, Mark, you're up.
All right, well, so I'm not going to take one of the late games because Greg and I will be absorbed on the same contest. Me, apparently responsibility-free, just watching it with my eyes. But I am plugged in on
as
this.
As opposed to with what else?
I don't know. I am plugged into this little 1 p.m. East Coast, 10 a.m. West Coast affair. Cardinals at Saints, and there's a couple reasons why I like this game a lot. Why? There's not. There's a lot
okay.
of junk.
Okay, you're
there's
right.
Actually, Christian Hackenberg comes off the board in the
where would you
round.
Go there? Honestly, where would you go? Before you just throw your ridiculous arrows, where would you go? There's a bunch of junk at 10 a.m.
No, go ahead.
Well, I hope so, because we're about 45
what am I supposed to be going excited about
minutes.
Broncos Colts
this does
every one of them
right.
has issues.
All I'm saying is
here's
this
what
probably
I would say.
Feels like a bloodbath, but
let me sell it
knows?
To you. Let me sell
go
it
ahead,
to you.
Sell it.
It may be a bloodbath, but I think you have one of the offenses out of Arizona that is improving week to week. They're fun to watch. Kyler Murray is living up to the promise, and they watching them against the Giants, against another team that had no idea how to deal with what Arizona was throwing at them. They could not stop the ground game. I think Arizona is finding a way, because of the way that they separate and spread out on offense, to have a dangerous run attack. You can't even call that like part of their passing attack, because there's no one around half of these guys that take the ball, especially when they're catching in space. I want to see how the Saints handle it. I think the Saints defense went into Chicago and put the Bears on such heavy blast that Chicago goes and loses this week. Their season may essentially be over, because the Saints, and I mentioned this last week, week after week they go in and whoever they deal with, they expose them and create a ton of issues for that team the next week with the media, with everyone answering. They're that dominant of a defense. Now, the Cardinals have a little bit less at stake, but Sean
who
Payton,
they're 3-3
first Cliff Kingsbury. Justin, I don't think if the Cardinals went 3-4-1, Arizona's going to be set on fire from like border to border. I think people are, they realize the Bears fans thought the team's racing right into the Super Bowl, making that game
from
a
Scottsdale
total
to Glendale.
Embarrassment. So this game is more intriguing than it looks on paper to some. I'm into it. What else do I need to do than be into it?
I can see why you'd be into it. It's a nice litmus test game for the Cardinals, who are beating up on some bad teams. But Greg Olson, basically, his analysis last week was, this team is really hard to defend because you know what they're going to do. You just have no idea when they're going to do it with all the fakes, the pre-snap motion, the jet sweeps. You just don't know what the alignment's going to lead to once the ball is snapped. And you see a lot of open spaces in the running game and even in the passing
game. The Cardinals
game.
You're talking about.
Yes.
Yep.
It's a test for the Saints, but, I mean, I would calm down about it. You know, this is still a Cardinals offense.
It's calm up down in, about your pick, Mark.
I mean, I know. I think it'd be a fun game. I mean, we haven't mentioned that Drew Brees is likely to return. That is a huge development. It's part of my least favorite trend that I've been seeing growing on Twitter, which is Twitter takes that players should stay on the bench through their bye week. This is a common thing. They're like, I don't think they should push it. I mean, he should be sitting during the bye week. Like a ton of people have said that about a lot of different injuries this year. It's like you have absolutely no medical information whatsoever. What do you know that?
But it's
you got it. You got to stay. Yeah. Why don't you
there's
play
a
it
counter,
safe?
Greg.
And you should sit through the bike. You don't know anything about any of their medical information.
Yeah, but
at all.
There's
what
a very easy. There's an extremely easy counter to you on the high horse right,
right.
now.
Right.
That if he has an injury that was enough to cost him 4 weeks, and you're playing a bad team, and you have a chance to have 2 more weeks of rest, that
if your voice was,
if the goal is to win the Super Bowl and you have an opportunity to get that extra rest to perhaps not rush back, because guys rush back from injuries all the time and re-aggravate them because they came back a week too soon.
For instance,
I don't think it's ridiculous.
Alvin Kamara had that.
I wonder if
you're supposed to just stay silent and never have any.
I wonder if
the
medical professionals with all the information considered that angle. You know, it's Drew Brees. If he's healthy, he's playing. Like if you were ready to do a show, you're doing the show. They consider all of that, of course. They're not going to put him out there unless he can play.
Well, hold on.
With Greg. Like, injuries are just not something I feel like I need to have an opinion on.
Right, exactly. That's my main thing.
It's you taking fans and treating them as if they're
fans.
Peasants, like wandering around
media.
In carts
it's
down
media.
In the village.
It has nothing to do with fans. It's media.
Greg, a little too highfalutin.
There are certain things where it's a hamstring that's nagged a player over and over. I would look at that a little
differently. About media and people covering the league, mostly that have opinion shows and are on Twitter, that you come out with hot takes about medical stuff. That's all.
Like, I mean, you shouldn't be like screaming at Stephen A. Smith about it. I get that. I mean, in general, that culture
I see that
is toxic.
A ton on Twitter, that it's crazy to play him against the Cardinals.
It's not anything foolish. You could have a measured take on it, even without being in the doctor's room. Yes,
I think it's probably smart to have no medical takes.
But you're sharing a medical take yourself.
To have none.
You think you're not having
a medical
take?
This is a medical take. That's true.
You
are suggesting that your concept of medical knowledge supersedes all of ours because you're in the chilled out mode.
I don't know anything is my point, that none of us know anything.
It's like people operate as if there's a level beyond 100%.
Right.
If the doctors say you're 100%, what more do you need?
Well, who said that we know that he's 100%?
I don't know.
See,
we don't know anything, so why even have an...
You're assuming because he's cleared that they believe he's 100%. We don't know that. But he may say, because I'm Drew Brees,
I am
the king of F Mountain over there, that I'm playing even if I don't feel all the way back. And
what's
they'll
F
say,
Mountain?
Well, and it's like, oh, well, we pay you $23 million a year, so we probably want return on our investment, but maybe it's better to give it a little bit of...
My thing is
space.
We're just operating at a deficit of information, which is true of almost everything that we do.
That extends beyond medical.
I feel like both ways.
It takes like 6-7 years, I think, of covering football to learn that you don't almost know anything about how the game works. And a lot of people, I think never even get there.
Then I would ask
They're
you this:
operating.
I'm
just saying the medical.
Why would
part
you
of it,
offer an opinion on anything? Beyond medical, why offer an opinion on anything?
I'm saying you get to that point, you try to be measured and you try to learn.
You guys.
I'm just saying.
Thumbs up for Drew Brees. Let's.
Yeah, there he goes.
Well done. All right, Mark, it is time. It's time to snake, Ricky. Did you do your homework?
Oh, my God. What?
An angry snake.
You're stupid. All right, Mark.
Game number two. And again, I think you'll reveal as you dig into the latter rounds here that we're not working with a ton of magical matchups on paper here. I'm going Giants-Lions because I want one more shot at the Lions to rescue themselves out of this hole. The Giants, to me at least, are interesting with Daniel Jones. I thought that there's something that Daniel Jones does, one or two or three things every game that make me like him more. And whether it's doing something that Eli Manning or fill-in-the-blank aging Stone Age pony veteran quarterback could not do, which is escapability when it gets into trouble sometimes, he's still making killer mistakes. I thought there was a strip sack on him last week against the Cardinals, and they put a ton of pressure on him. That was totally inexcusable, that like another quarterback with better field vision would not have allowed that to happen to him. So the Giants are a team that the Lions better take advantage of. It sounds like Sterling
Shepard
will not be in this game. Greg, I'll confirm that with you on the medical front. I'm not sure.
He's
just
not expected.
That's
to
just
play.
What
not
I'm
expected.
Hearing at this point. But
who are you to say that?
I'm not going to say it. But the Lions are banged up. No Kerryon Johnson. Their offense to me is just simply not the same without him. But this is a game you got to take care of at home.
Oh, win a ball game.
You have to.
Detroit Lions.
I don't know what you're selling to anyone. I thought it was interesting that the Matt Patricia did a very Belichickish thing where he traded away Quandre Diggs, which irritated the Lions locker room, including Darius Slay, who spoke about it to no end. And that if you're going to do Belichickian things, the Patriots just went and picked up Justin Bethel. That made everyone happy because he's a Hall of Fame special teamer. But if you're the Lions, you're cutting the other way and you annoyed your secondary, you annoyed your defense. I wonder why that move was made.
Second year in a row, they've kind of thrown up a white flag at the trade deadline, Golden Tate last year.
Yeah. Well, this isn't a white flag. They like a younger player, and he was probably one of the worst starters in the league at his position.
I'm just saying from a locker room angle.
You gave him away for nothing.
Now he's one of the worst in the league.
Now you've reached your we've signed Marcus Gilchrist off the street section of the season, which never works well for any defense out there. So it is a bit of a white flag.
I wonder if Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick share info. Like, did they call each other and talk about the Giants? You know, the Patriots just played the Giants.
They're like best friends.
I know. They just played the Giants. Lions play 3 weeks ago. Like, does that happen? I'm just curious about that.
There's a lavish
it should.
Owners meeting party every year that takes place at a luxury hotel that we are and all media are allowed to attend. And it's kind of from a people watching perspective. The best party of the year to be involved with, because it's the party where all the head coaches are there, all the GMs are there, owners milling around, and I think it was not this past
year. Mike Tirico and friends.
Tirico's there. Everybody's there. And you'll see people getting drunk. You'll see coaches stumbling. It's fun times, okay? And you don't share that info, who you see stumbling, but you laugh about it privately. Now, that's
sometimes they've laughed at us, I think, at times too.
I'm sure they have. Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick with their significant others, the great Linda. Not Belichick. What's it, Linda Holiday?
Linda Holiday.
It's Ricky Holiday.
It's always a holiday with Linda.
Not Rick Holiday.
Per some.
And Matt Patricia's wife, I believe, sitting together, having a drink, laughing. There's no bitter situation between those two men. Just wanted to talk about that a little bit.
This should be... They should be a better Giants offense. I mean, they should. They had one
against a bad defense.
They had one good game with Daniel Jones, and they've had four terrible games. They're averaging 12 points a game on offense over 4 weeks. I think that's I would guess that's the worst in the NFL. I didn't check it, but 12 points a game is hard to do. Their defense and special teams are almost outscoring Daniel Jones over the last 4 weeks. You have Evan Ingram back. You have Saquon Barkley back. You should be able to move the ball on this Lions team. It should be a good, like, high-scoring game. This Lions team is going to have to win shootouts. I think they're kind of built for it, but it's tougher without
Kenny. I mean, Patricia, the guy has a ring as a defensive coordinator. And, of course, we know Belichick's the mastermind there. But this team is 31st in total defense, 28th against the run, 30th against the pass. Saquon Barkley, for what it's worth, is practicing in full this week. And he did...
He looks fine last
He did week. Slightly aggravate the ankle, we're told, in the loss to the Cardinals, but there's also a chance that this could be that 200 total yard Barkley
game. He had a couple great plays, too.
But I mean, we've been very nice west of the Lions.
Well, those days are over.
I mean, we have been patient with the Lions. We've been kind. But if you do not win at home against a Giants team that's going in the wrong direction, you're in trouble.
You guys are a lot more interested in the Lions at this point than I am. They had their few weeks where they're interesting. They're done. They have a bad defense. They're 21 in DVOA. You said all those other numbers that were even worse. And the guy they spent $85 million on, Trey Flowers, has one sack and isn't really doing much for them. I don't. What is fascinating about this defense?
That may be a case where Belichick and Patricia did not talk as much as Patricia would like to about Trey Flowers, who he knew very well, but please.
All right, next up is the old Zeuser. I will check back in with the Jets, who cannot play any worse than they played last week on Monday Night Football, and now they travel to Jacksonville to face the Jags. I think the quarterbacks are what interests me here. It's Sam Darnold, who, by the way, on top of everything else in that game, got his foot stepped on, and they had to remove his toenail.
Which, by the way, is another underrated people like have vague teenage memories of having. Have you ever had a toenail removed?
Well, I've had a fingernail removed. Yes.
It is not a picnic. It is no fun.
And
Greg, that is a personal medical coming from my actual life.
That works.
But anyway,
I don't think he should play this week.
To the point that it kept him out of practice. I believe he returned in a limited fashion today.
He looked pretty good today. There was some footage on NFL Network.
So he'll be fine, but it's just more, when it rains, it pours.
He's been through a lot.
For S-Darn. So, I want to see the quarterbacks in this game. I want to see Darnold back and show some fight and show some resolve after what was really, frankly, a humiliating week for him, even if he did handle it well in the media. And I do think he'll bounce back, although they're getting a road matchup against the Jaguars, who trade away Jalen Ramsey, and the defense gets a lot better against the Bengals, of course. But they played extremely well last week. I want to see more from Gardner Minshew. I want to see the game. I want to see what everybody's excited about. I want to see what you love about him, Mark, because watching him the last 2 weeks hasn't given me a lot of juice. So I think it's kind of an important game for him. With Nick Foles, I think, is still a little bit ways off, but he's got to stack a couple of good performances here to justify keeping him in the lineup, and Darnold needs to show everybody that he's not the ghost guy. Hmm.
I think if Nick Foles had stayed healthy and played the way Gardner Minshew has played, the Jags would be very happy with that trade. I think Gardner Minshew has been good enough. He's been good enough to win, and the difference between the two is he's still developing. He can become much better. I think you have to stay with him. And
we got 3 more weeks still, even until Foles is eligible.
I don't fault Gardner Minshew for the Jaguars only, having single digits for 2.5. He leads them down on the opening drive last year, and they fumble at the goal line, and then now all of a sudden Gardner Minshew's not a good quarterback?
He has calm feet. Like, he's so calm in the pocket, but then he can also, make extra time by moving around and doing those little slaloms. He doesn't make mistakes. I guess that's what stands out to me. For a young quarterback, he makes really good decisions. He's averaging 7.5 yards per attempt. He has 10 touchdowns and 2 interceptions.
Well, yeah.
If Darnold had those numbers, would be going crazy. This was the game I was going to lock up. I feel really good that the Jaguars are just a better team than the Jets. I think this is not a good Jaguars defense. It's pretty mediocre in basically every metric possible. But I do think it's a tricky matchup for a team that has offensive line and protection issues, because Todd Wash likes to get creative. This is a team that loves to blitz, loves to send a lot at you, and I think he's going to be licking his chops. And I just seen too much bad offense from the Jets that I trust the bad offense more than I trust the one game against the Cowboys, which was really one half against the Cowboys. So I just think the Jaguars are just a little more sound throughout, and I like them.
I'm with you in the sense that the thing that keeps carrying over for New York is bad offensive line play. I like the matchup for Jacksonville at home. And, I would, when it comes to Adam Gase, and I know that, number one, you went and you got Le'Veon Bell, and Le'Veon Bell has been in a terrible situation as a running back with the quarterback chaos they've had. So I'm not asking for big numbers, but I do question, if you go back and look at Miami's running backs under Adam Gase and the Adam Gase experience in general, is this the coach that knows how to maximize Le'Veon Bell? He hasn't topped 70 yards on the ground or 60 in the air all year. And you have one of the leagues, in theory, top weapons, and you have Darnold back.
I've been so impressed by Bell this season.
I wouldn't say that.
I think he's been in an impossible situation, and he runs hard, and he makes something out of nothing. And when he had no quarterback play at all, when Darnold was out, he didn't do much damage, but the guy plays hard. Jamal Adams, went on Twitter and pointed out everybody was lumping this guy in with Antonio Brown, and he's been nothing but a good
soldier. No, he has nothing to do with Antonio Brown.
But I don't think it has anything to do with Adam Gase either.
All right, but he's been an awesome teammate in New York, number one. And that's not.
I don't think it's a Gase thing.
He's been in a bad.
They got to use him.
I want to see how Gase uses him when they have all their parts in, because it might be a Gase thing.
He lacks. Bell is one of the most talented running backs ever, and you can see that, and he's running hard. I think he lacks a little bit of the explosion that he used to. I mean, you have that many runs, you have that many plays that you get to the second level, you would expect that he would have something longer than a 13-yard run before last week. Now, I think it's coming along. He's gotten a little better each week. But I, like Mark's saying, I want to see them use him as a receiver, because he's one of the best receiving backs that I've ever seen.
He has 10 yards through the air in the last two games. I'm just saying, it's for an offense especially that is dealing with a ton of pocket pressure, your quarterback's under duress, throwing to your running back is something we're seeing every other coach in the league do. And Gase, at some point, runs out of excuses.
Well,
have your quarterback back.
I'm not arguing that Gase is a mess.
I just don't.
I just think
he's not the guy I trust to unleash Bell at this point. Prove me wrong.
I also want to point out, Mark, Greg, on injury corner, C.J. Mosley was deemed well enough to play on Monday. And on the first drive, he's limping along the plane of the goal line. And now Gase announces on Thursday that they have to do a, quote, deep dive on what's going on with his groin. He's done. I could book it. He's going to be on IR probably before this podcast is over.
Dang.
So you essentially, and who knows, maybe he's back in 4 weeks. But the season's basically lost. And that was a centerpiece signing of the offseason.
Well, they have.
He gets hurt in week one. And
they have an easy schedule coming up. You were saying even a week ago,
Things change, Greg.
If they lose the Patriots. Well, but it only counts once in the standings.
Some losses count more than that. I don't have any more faith.
That was a psychologically jarring defeat.
Right.
And when you're on the other end of that as a fan, you feel that a little bit more than
you win this week, and then it erases it. But if you don't win this week, you know, bye-bye. The Jags are last in red zone percentage. That's one thing where, for a running team, you would not think they would be the worst team in the league in terms of scoring touchdowns in the red zone. So that's why all their games are close.
And honestly, with Minshew, his numbers would be much different. They had four drives last week that ended in field goals where they were 9, 10, 11. Yeah. They've done that every week.
Before Monday night, I would have said this is going to be a great game and I feel good. Now, who knows? Maybe the Jets compete, but I would not be surprised if they lose 31-3 either.
Yeesh.
That was bad on Monday. All right, Wes, you're up.
Well, I'm risking a potential uniform apocalypse in this game. But, you know, it is America's heartland in a grass field. I got to go with my Titans, you know. Buccaneers at Titans.
Every week with you.
Well, I have fun watching
them. Amber waves of grain.
I have fun watching them. I thought Tannehill was a massive upgrade on Mariota. Even with a few negative plays, they had their highest yards per attempt of the year, their best third down percentage of the year. Their outside receivers, Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, both had their highest catches of the year. And their head coach, Mike Vrabel, came in Monday and could not stop talking about tight window throws as if he had never seen them before with Marcus Mariota under center. It was a different offense. You even had a two-minute drill in there to end the first half. I mean, these are things Titans fans just aren't used to seeing. And then Jeffrey Simmons, the first-round pick, comes back. And as Greg said in the debrief, may have been the best player on the field. Albert Haynesworth was raving about him, saying, when I looked at this guy,
Haynesworthian
didn't look like a rookie. He looked like a fifth or sixth year Albert Haynesworth.
It's easy, I guess, because of the Titans thing, but that was a great comp because he seems so strong along with the athleticism that he was overwhelming. I texted a little with DJ about it this week because he had called Simmons a top five player in the draft, if not for the ACL surgery. And then there was also a sexual assault when he was an alleged assault early in his college career.
There was a woman picking on his sister and her children.
Right.
And he stepped
in. I'm sorry. That should be corrected. And that was back in 2016. But the Combine didn't invite him because of that. But just watching him play, he was a massive difference maker. And Tannehill was too. I mean, I think you have these receivers, Corey Davis and A.J. Brown. There's a chance that you get a little more out of them if you give him a chance to make those tight catches. And who would have thought after all these years, finally we got Mariota Winston in year five to decide it. And the winner of that debate is Ryan Tannehill. He won the Mariota Winston debate.
We do have a lot of evidence on Ryan Tannehill over the course of 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, I'm not getting
to know that we've been sucked in by that guy before too, right?
Okay, allow me to clarify.
Yes, go ahead.
I don't think he's any kind of long-term answer. He's just making the Titans more watchable, and I'm enjoying it. Let's see what he does against a different defense than the Chargers.
In a better situation, I think there's a case that can be a Dalton-like figure, a Dalton scale.
We've talked about that before.
Median. Yeah. Yeah,
where the Tana scale.
His career goes like that, which is a little better than I think people think of him as. He's fine.
His sitting there at the Dalton scale line was the one guy we can think that maybe is doing, and maybe this year too, is Dalton doesn't really fit as a Dalton scale at this point.
Mm.
But I cannot get out of my own mind watching the Bucks live.
We had an assassination on Andy Dalton by Mark straight and into my mind. I loved it. 1-2 punch.
Well, I think I'm being extremely fair on Andy Dalton at this point.
You do?
I mean, he back-to-back-to-back interceptions.
Why do you think you're being fair when he's the same quarterback he's always been? The only thing that's changed is the surrounding
talent. Why are we talking about Andy Dalton?
We can get into Andy Dalton. I mean, then let's flip over to Jameis Winston, who totally sabotaged his own team a week ago and does it every other week. And, Greg, you pointed out the Saints game where he should have had 5 picks in that game where he didn't. And I wonder when the Bucs have, you know, they don't have someone to throw in there like a Ryan Tannehill at this point, but the experiment is over. If there's anyone trying to tell me that you're going to travel into next season with Jameis Winston, you got to be kidding me.
Feels very unlikely. And this is the wrong team for him to face, I think, because I think the Titans, what they're good at with Dean Pease, they're very Patriots-like. They have the veteran secondary. They can mix up and confuse bad quarterbacks. into making mistakes. That's kind of what they're best at. And then they, for these games against some of the bad quarterbacks, they can look like one of the best defenses in the league, and maybe this will be that week. This wouldn't have been a bad
a reminder that as Tannehill, way of an upgrade over Mariota, but they needed a Chargers apocalypse to even win at home last week. So they were coming off 4 out of 5 losses before that. So it's hard to trust.
They were also up 10 points late in the fourth
quarter. I get it. I'm just saying that game,
they're a middle-of-the-road team.
Kind of handed
to them. They're not a team that blows too many teams out.
All right.
One little note, Shaq Barrett's still sitting at 9 sacks. Keep giggling with your...
You know what's funny? You're actively rooting against.
I'm not rooting against him at all. Again, if we want to actually remember how.
But that's what you would want to have happen.
If we want to actually remember what happened on the show, it was not Shaq Barrett specific. It was the player that jumps out to 8 sacks early.
You said Shaq won't get to 10. I remember. This is when he had 8. There's been 3 games since. And he has 1 sack in those 3 games.
He is like the archetype of someone that would finish with 9 after that
right.
early season
but
explosion.
But do you want him to finish with 9?
You're texting us about it during the week.
I think,
of course,
it becomes one of those things where if it played out where it would just be another example of shutting you clowns up. Yes, I would enjoy it.
It was one of my favorite.
Poor Shaq Barrett's got this guy in California rooting against him to do anything.
It's not really a Shaq Barrett thing, but if it played out that way, which I have no control over, no more than Greg does with people tweeting about medical scenarios at this point in our society.
How dare they?
I'll just roll with it.
When have any of us clowns ever shut up?
Right.
No, that won't be happening.
One of my favorite
it's a little personal victory.
Type of text chains, though, because Mark's texted us about it yesterday, I believe.
What, for the first time?
He was just like, Shaq's still stuck at 9. And
it's like the middle of the day.
Wes had the same reaction as
doing
me.
My
he was
tape
like,
work.
What are you?
What is
this
mean?
Question mark. No one even knew what he was talking about.
Doing my homework in the middle of the day. I thought I'd remind you before I forgot to remind you.
All right, let's move on. Up next is Greg Rosenthal.
Ooh, does this mean I have the snake?
You sure do, buddy.
Ouch.
I'm ready for my first pick, at least. Maybe I'll use my time allotted to get that second pick ready. That's what they do in the NFL sometimes. So I'm going to take the Chargers and the Bears.
This is a
weird game, but a strangely meaningful game for the Bears, certainly, because I think both these teams are hoping that they've hit bottom, and one of them obviously hasn't because they're going to lose on Sunday. And at least the Chargers, for the first time in a long time, have some good injury news. Yeah, they might have lost Mike Pouncey for the season. Yeah, they might have lost Forrest Lamb for the season, his replacement, which kind of slipped under the radar. But they did get Melvin Ingram back at practice this week. Sounds like he'll be back. They did get Russell Okung back. He will be starting this game at left tackle. That's a massive upgrade.
Mm.
And you have Hunter Henry playing like an all-pro tight end who you missed for about a month.
So stay healthy, kid.
They're looking a little better, and I thought they did some positive things in Tennessee, and I certainly don't think they're a cakewalk. I was very surprised to see the Bears open this game as huge favorites. I just do not see Mitchell Trubisky leading a huge
favorite. That's strange.
Against any reasonable NFL team at this point.
Yeah, it's a Bortles situation there. His mechanics are out of sync. His base is off. His lower body and upper body are disconnected. A lot of backpedaling and throwing off his back foot at the slightest sign of pressure.
Like it when Wes goes mechanics in the lab.
I love it.
He's just broken, and their defense knew it. By the fourth quarter, you could see their effort level had fallen off, and that's what happens when you have a Bortles type of situation. Broken beyond repair. Remember former Bears center Olin Krutz? Mark?
Vaguely. Cycling back through the memory.
It was like
on
one of those
Olin
guys that when the Bears
say
had
yes.
down
like,
your
oh,
yes,
yes,
I do.
Yeah.
They're like,
Krutz.
At least we had Olin Krutz.
Well, that's what I mean by the Bortles situation. Krutz was saying this week that, the quarterback obviously is the one player in the building who can lift everyone up, but he's also the one player in the building who can take everyone down with him.
Interesting.
And that's what's – how do we know how good Anthony Miller is as a football player? They're number 2 or 3 wide receiver. And look, last week, this was not a Trubisky all on him. They have fumbles by Montgomery, fumbles by Miller. Allen Robinson couldn't get his second toe down inbounds on Trubisky's best throw. It was a offense-wide collapse last week.
They're a really bad running game, and their defense is just not as good. So whether it's Hicks or it's Trubisky, it's still really good. But when you go from number 1 to a team that gives up big-time yardage to the Raiders and to Teddy Bridgewater, you're not as good as you were.
I mean, the Bears are the last team, the last offense that I would make excuses for at this point. But I'm almost at the point with the Saints defense where, okay, let's regroup and see what you do this week.
Bears defense.
No, he's saying
no, the Saints, Saints. What the Saints did to the Bears offense.
Oh, I
offense.
See, I see, I see.
I think the Bears defense, to Wes's point, that locker room is fractured right now because they need to realize that, you know, they're on the field now for 35-plus minutes a game, and they're gassed by the end. When they lost to the Raiders, that had something to do with the Bears offense just not performing, too. Matt Nagy's at the point where he's got to announce in the middle of the week that he's going to call plays. This is about as far removed from this season's experience that Bears fans thought they would get. And I feel bad for the fan base because they haven't a lot of upside moments, but you went into the year with a shaky quarterback and some shaky skill position operations here, and it's playing out. And I wonder if what the Saints did is just a continuation of the model of how to beat Trubisky week after week and where his confidence will be because, you know, this is a guy that only started for one season in college. He doesn't have 60 college/pro starts under his belt to deal with, and he's not growing. He's regressing.
We have a segment on the Power Rankings show I do with Matt Money Smith called
Humble Brag.
The Voice of the Chargers talks about what's wrong with the Chargers without getting fired. And he's such a smart guy, and he sees everything, and he was breaking down what made that last sequence of that game such a cluster F near the goal line, because not only was there Chargers failures and Anthony Lynn with brutal play calling, giving the ball back to Melvin Gordon a second time after he nearly fumbled the first time, and then he does fumble, but the officials both on the floor and upstairs and on Park Avenue or wherever they do these reviews, they missed a 10-second runoff within that sequence. They also, Austin Eckler scored a touchdown. There was not enough evidence to overturn that initial
touchdown.
That I agree
with. That got a little
And that's pure Chargers. And even the Melvin Gordon, the ball comes out of his hand on the first and goal carry. He lands on top of it. You could make the argument that should have been a touchdown. It was just such a mess. But you wonder what happens going forward with Melvin Gordon, who I honestly have reached the point where I have pity for the guy. I feel for him because he comes out in the media this week and he knows not only is he not getting that big paycheck, but now he's public enemy number one amongst his fan base and fantasy owners.
There are repercussions to actions.
Yes, there are. But it's also, as a human being, when he comes out to the media and says, one thing I know is I'll never miss another training camp, you sense the guy is in a place, in a tough place in his life. He's not in shape, obviously. He doesn't have that explosiveness near the goal line. And Anthony Lynn, who's a former running backs coach, he wants Melvin Gordon to get that game-winning touchdown, but he's got to be smarter, and you just wonder what Gordon's role is going forward at his current state.
I mean, one thing we don't know behind the scenes, to add to that list, is the kind of advice he's getting from the people around him, if you're Melvin Gordon, going into this season, where he's probably regretting some of the missteps he took based on agents and counsel saying this is your year to do this.
This is something that was important to him before he entered the league. He came into the league saying, I'm going to change the way running backs get paid. And I get that he admitted he wouldn't do it again, but he also affected other people's lives. He affected his teammates' lives. He affected his coaches' lives. He affected the owners' lives by not coming in shape, by not reporting with his teammates. And now he's playing like 2018 Leonard Fournette. Even before that goal line situation, he's not explosive, he's not good, and he's cost himself money instead of earning money. It was a bad decision with a lot of repercussions.
That's fair.
And the coach bears a lot of fault for it. We see this in baseball, too. This is a big part of coaching. You bring a guy up from a rehab assignment, and he's not what he once was, don't play him.
He's a little loyal to a fault.
They pushed it a little hard. Anthony.
And if I'm going to bury Jalen Ramsey, Wes makes a good point, that if he comes back, Melvin Gordon comes back, he's got to be Melvin Gordon that they need him to be, and apparently he's not.
And the worst thing for the Chargers is because we've talked about Melvin Gordon. He's a good trade candidate. Send him to Buffalo. Send him X, Y, and Z. I mean, thanks to his actual play on the field, his stock for a trade could not be lower right now. Whatever they were going to get is less.
Greg, it's time to snake.
All right.
I'm going to go Seahawks-Falcons. Cool. Only two early games left on the board. Chance to see Russell Wilson. We don't know if Matt Ryan is going to play in this game. He has not practiced Wednesday or Thursday. Maybe. Is it worth noting this or not? Matt Schaub moved the offense and scored a touchdown better than Matt Ryan did all last
week. Well, you did it. You noted it.
You put so much stock in garbage time.
Ouch, what an indictment.
No, like Greg and I have always disagreed on the value of garbage time production, and I think it's actually worse than meaningless because it leads you to conclusions that don't mean anything.
I don't think the Matt Schaub moving matters. I think it's hard to separate out. It is a philosophical thing, like what garbage time matters and what doesn't, because almost as equally as a team going up and down the field with their backups, things happen like what happened in the Jets game where you just keep getting destroyed no matter who's on the field. So it's just hard to know which one matters. I think there'll be plenty of garbage time in this game because the Falcons defense is a garbage defense. I mean, them and the Dolphins are by far the two worst defenses in the league. And as long as Russell Wilson is allowed to throw the ball, they're going to be one of the most efficient passing attacks in the league. It's crazy that the number two passing attack in DVOA is basically Wilson and Lockett improvising and then DK Metcalf's three routes. Like, that's right. That's about it, and that's good for number two in the league.
Right, and then the other side of the ball, they don't have a single player on pace for five sacks. They miss, like, a Cliff Averill or a Chris Clemens, one of those speedy guys coming off the edge. And if you can't sack a hobbled Matt Ryan or a Matt Schaub behind this offensive line with no running game, then you're just a terrible pass-rushing team.
Hmm. Yeah, Matt Ryan was... You know, that offensive line is such a liability. They got him hurt last week. I mean, he was punished from wire to wire. I would like to see a Seahawks game because, yes, they are fun to watch. They are drama queens because they're going to get out or down early or keep it too close in some of these games. And then, you know, with magic to Lockett, which seems to happen every week, they'll pull up stuff out of a hat and get close at the end. How about a game like this where you're playing an offense that's just an open barn door? Get up early and right. actually run the Schottenheimer offense the way he'd like to, which is pound people with the run late versus this late nonsense.
I'm not sure they're any better than they were a year ago. They've played seven games. They've lost convincingly twice. They've won convincingly once, and they've won four times at the buzzer. I mean, that's, you know, the ball's bounced a little better than they were a year ago, but they're just kind of that sort of team.
Well, it feels like their passing game is better, but their running game is much worse than it was last year.
Harrell's got to recognize it, though. When he said that, when he took criticism for missing the long field goal last week, it was on fourth and three, a 53-yarder, that his plan was if he didn't go for the field goal, they would have punted it. And he said, because that's who we are. We're a defense and running team. We punted there. But you're not. Your defense is below average. Your running game is below average in terms of efficiency. Your offense is awesome. I mean, your passing attack's awesome. Lean into that.
Your quarterback is an MVP candidate because largely the passing success.
I will say that, yes, there's a lot of close games with the Seahawks. There's a reason why the Seahawks win a lot of close games. It's not always a coin flip. It's because Russell Wilson
That's fair.
As good as that as
Been
anyone
doing it for a
seen.
Decade.
Yep.
All right, let's move on. Chris Wessling. You okay with where you're coming up in the draft today?
I am. I'm not okay with what's left to pick from. I will take, for the first time all year, the Bengals.
Oh!
On the road against the Rams.
Zach Taylor.
Wow, you bailed me out, Wes.
Sean McVay.
In London. Back at Wembley
Oh,
Stadium.
In London, not in LA.
Wembley Stadium.
What time?
This is a normal time game, 10 a.m.
Oh. Dodge bolt there.
A little London pop. I like
Next
that.
Next week we're back at the 6:30 a.m.
Damn.
Oh, I'd rather have the 6:30.
Oh, really? Would you
so
get
I could
up
pay attention
it?
To the game.
Oh, wow. Good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
A little 6 a.m. wake up call.
I mean, I'm waking up anyway. It's Sunday. Mm. It's a big football day. You got to get up early, ready to face the world.
You putting the egg yolks into the glass.
I just happened to wake up early
jogging
on Sunday,
through the city.
You know?
I like it. Go ahead.
It's like Christmas morning. You got a whole day of football ahead of you.
Just like Christmas morning.
You're a lucky man, Wes, in a lot of ways.
I don't know what to say about the Bengals. Like, you can't. I think I disagree with Mark, and I don't think you can evaluate Andy Dalton. You just can't evaluate him behind this offensive line with the worst rushing attack we've ever seen. Throwing to an injured wide receiver core in a new offense, we know what he is after all these years. I don't think he got worse. I think he's the same quarterback when everything else got worse. I want to look at it. I can understand the Bengals say, let's keep A.J. Green. If you're Zach Taylor especially, you're coming in and you think, okay, if I can just get A.J. Green back, Tyler Boyd, if we get John Ross back at some point, Joe Mixon, Gio Bernard, look at the weapons I suddenly have. I understand a coach saying that.
Cordy Glenn returned to practice.
Auden Tate making like three or four great catches every week now.
It's right. I do think you can say that it's trending towards the end of an era, though, that they will move on from him because it doesn't seem like it's a great match. And maybe it was just the
From Green.
from Andy Dalton after this year. It was just like the emotion of it, but the end of that game, the booing, like the windy, half-empty stadium, like where you could actually
hear... Half-empty.
You could hear...
It was a smattering of people.
Right. You could hear the individuals' different, you know, timbres of their voice booing into the... It just felt so like... late December and ugly, and just felt like this is ending.
Yeah, my only call is for a new era. Like, let's try something new, because a lot of those weapons that you listed have been there for a long time, and I'm not certain Zach Taylor's the guy to take them over. I thought the Rams, you know, I know who they were playing last week, was kind of a nice FU game for Jared Goff and the offense to say they're not perfect, but you know what? They did everything you could have asked. I thought Goff made some really nice throws. He is far from... the dude at this point. But after the fire that they were taking, they went and they took care of business. I don't know what you could have asked the offense to
get right
in Atlanta. Yeah, they got right.
And they focused on what they do well, which is those three receivers. They're awesome. And they played a lot of tempo. I think it was a little bit of back to basics.
Some hurry up.
I think you'll see that.
And the offensive line was made to look really good by a horrible Falcons pass rush.
But let's see some more Darrell Henderson. I've seen enough of Gurley. I mean, he's a useful role player, and he's their starter. He's a starting running back, but he had a play where he had a canyon opened up, and it was just him and the safety. I forget who it was, number 30 maybe it's Demonte KZ on the Falcons.
And he just blows
him. It was just what Wes said. He didn't try to make a miss. He kind of burrowed and just went down. And when Darrell Henderson comes in, he doesn't look like he knows where he's going, but he's going there fast with a lot of power. Let's see more.
I agree.
My last thought on this game is people are teeing off on Jared Goff because I think he's one of those guys that people like to tee off on. But if your offensive line...
Banana Republic ads, maybe?
Maybe. But if your offensive line goes from an A to a C overnight, and maybe worse, and your superstar running back goes from a super-duper star to, what did you call him? A piece?
A role player?
There's not going to be...
All right, I don't say that.
The idea...
I think you're right.
Now, Jared Goff is maybe not a superstar. Maybe people are puffing out their chest.
I think that's what
I always knew
is.
That he wasn't a superstar. But I think a lot of us were under the impression that he was a good quarterback in a great system. And now that he's playing poorly, it's not necessarily because he's terrible. It's because things have changed a lot
on the
Rams.
I'm not giving up
on
this team at all, especially with Jalen Ramsey. I think they can be a factor in the NFC.
Goff is... terrible. I don't think we need to go there, but he was an MVP candidate a year ago. I'm with you, though, Dan. I think that...
A lot of vitriol at that guy.
But from the beginning, there was also, if anything, that nagged Goff, if he was a superstar in waiting, was that it was just Sean McVay teeing him up at the line of scrimmage play after play and making
him look
better than he was.
Because it's people that don't know enough about football.
I think it's fair to wonder, like, what's his ceiling? You know, he's still only 25. Can he be a consistent top five quarterback? I don't know if many people have...
Can he go on the road and win?
Right. There's some people that have believed he's had that in him throughout.
Top five is superstar.
Right. No one in this podcast has been like that. Can he be a very functional top 12 type of guy and win a lot of games? Sure.
All right. Let's close out the draft portion of proceedings here. I kind of get bailed out here. I get a late game. I was worried that Wes is going to go after his Broncos, but I guess they were so bad last time we saw him on Thursday Night Football that Wes...
No, the Colts bore me to tears. It took me 6 tries to finish that game.
So the Colts, they welcome the Denver Broncos to Lucas Oil Stadium.
That's an early game, though.
This
I thought you would take Raiders, Texans.
A late game.
Yes.
And I believe I wanted to, but then I'd have 3 early games. Do I have this wrong? Because I'm looking at the Week 8 schedule. And
I believe
4:25.
You need to be taking.
Yeah, you're looking. That appears. I think they moved the time of the game.
Oh, I got killed on a typo here.
You need Oakland. Now, Oakland at Houston.
Read the research manual. There you go. This is great podcasting. But yes, it's a 10 a.m. game.
But I'm not crazy. This also has.
They moved the time of the game.
Okay.
And I'll be absorbing that game for
you. It's a typo.
Don't you worry.
Banged right. by a typo.
Well, if I'm getting it at 1 p.m. either way, I'm moving then. I'm sorry, Mark. To Oakland at Houston.
Oh,
that's fine.
Because...
It's a better game.
Whenever I could watch, I've said this before, Deshaun Watson on a Sunday. I'm watching Deshaun Watson on a Sunday. And the Raiders, they're not a great team. But if you watch even the Packers game, where they ended up getting a 40-burger dropped on them, if they execute a little bit better in the red zone, I believe there was 3 trips to the red zone that ended with no points, I'm not saying they were ever going to beat the Packers because Aaron Rodgers was simply too great in that game, but that game had a chance to be a lot more competitive, and maybe that's because the Raiders aren't good enough to execute, but I also think we've seen enough from them that where they had an off day in terms of the red zone. I think they could go to Houston and absolutely compete. I did think about locking up the Texans just because Houston is coming off that tough loss at Indy, and they're another team that I think if they bring their A game and they're at home, they're pretty tough to beat. I think that's the version of the Texans we see, and I think the Texans do go away with a W here. The people in the desert think this is a pretty nice setup for Houston for what it's worth. So I do like the Texans in this game, but I would not discount this being another one of those close games because Houston seems to like to play those, and the Raiders they're not getting wiped out very often this season.
The Texans, that's what they've been doing. All one score games have been their recipe week after week. I thought the Colts loss was rough and under the radar rough because of just some lost opportunities. The in the grasp call on Deshaun Watson, which that is a, the way that's called when it is, it never feels very consistent to me. It feels subjective based on who's on the field. That ripped a touchdown away from them that should not have been, I thought. And then they got deep down into the Colts red zone again and were forced to kick a field goal when they should have scored. I mean, little things like that near the goal line hurt the Texans a lot last week. In another world, they win that game. I mean, they were just as talented, I thought, as the Colts were.
Their secondary can't cover anyone. J.J. Watt's hitting the quarterback six times, and the quarterback has the best game of his life.
J.J. Watt's coming. I mean, he is coming on strong. You could hear it in his voice when he talked this week. He basically said he thought it was the best game he's played since he's come back from all those injuries going back 4 years. And I think it looked like it. He's been getting better each week. But the cornerbacks are so bad that the Texans participated in what, as I thought about it, was maybe one of the most disrespectful trades in NFL history. I mean, the Raiders said, hey, Gary and Conley, we're disrespect you so much. We want you to play for the team that we're playing against this week so that we can throw it all over you. We don't want to wait a week. We want to throw on Gary and Conley right now.
That is
pretty bad. I mean, people say, oh, they trade in your division. How about you trade him and play him the next week?
Josh Jacobs has yet to practice this week, and their entire offense is based on him. If you read between the lines on the way Romo was announcing last week, if they don't get an early lead and lean on it, they're done as an offense.
Well,
him and Darren Waller, yep.
John Gruden's, you know, feeling himself. He's doing an awesome job. They are eighth in efficiency on
Absolutely.
Offense with Trevor Davis, Keelan Doss, and Renfro as their top three receivers right now. Tyrell Williams should return. Their offensive line's incredible. It might be the very best offensive line in the league now that Gabe Jackson and Trent Brown looks like he's going to be back too. They're dangerous. That's what I thought about locking up the Texans too, but I just think the Raiders play this weird old-school slow style with three tight ends and a fullback, but they score, and that leads to a lot of, like, offensive-led games that are close at the end. I could see that happening Sunday.
All right, Mark, close it out for the draft portion of this.
All right, well, I will take the much-ballyhooed Broncos at Colts game that that's going to
so
go down in the history of our drafts is maybe a missed opportunity for you, Dan.
Possibly.
You had it.
I could live with it.
You had it in your wheelhouse, and you let it go.
How many Stone Pony tweets are we going to get this game?
I'm not going to be tweeting up a storm about Joe Flacco because I think as a nation, right, we came to a conclusion. And you wrapped that up perfectly last Thursday night, too.
I was the last holdout.
There's no more. What more is there to say about some of these guys that are just lodged in these positions and you can feel the end creeping close? They've given away at this point Emmanuel Sanders. I think Cortland Sutton every week does something great for the Broncos. Deshaun Hamilton have a bigger role there. Their offense to me is just, you got to wait till next year. You're stuck with this because Drew Lock is not, when you have John Elway coming out and saying, this would be the time to give us Drew Lock. He's not ready. You can tell Vic Fangio was not on the Drew Lock train in general. And so he probably does not want to flip away from Flacco, no matter how bad he looked. The Colts to me remind me of a little bit. I look at the Eagles and I say, why can't the coaching staff coach up the parts on offense to look better than they do? I look at the Colts and I feel like there's a lot of middle range dudes there outside of like a T.Y. Hilton that Frank Reich coaches up every week. They get open, guys like Zach Pascal, you know, they, to me, it's week after week, it's not stars, and they outshine the parts on the roster. And the Colts, to me, are going to be there at the end because of the way they're coached.
Wes, why was Jake Brisket not getting your pajamas moving? What's up with that?
This is an extraordinarily well-coached
game.
Extraordinarily well-coached team. Jacoby Brissett plays a very boring style of football to me. I can't remember any of the great throws he made. None of them stand out. I think this is the product you get when your best player by far is a guard. It's just not that fun to watch.
I like watching them because Frank Reich in the red zone. Frank Reich in the red zone is like a weekly buddy comedy. You don't know what he's going to come out with. He's going to come up with something. Guys are wide open. He comes up with these crazy plays.
Banana in the tailpipe.
They're one of the best red zone teams. He creates open receivers. Brissett did have a couple of nice deep outs in that last game.
He's got plenty of arm. There's no question about that.
But all six of their games have been one score. So they're... You said you wanted to see the Seahawks win, you know, convincingly. I'd like if we do think the Colts are going to be there at the end, and I had them in the playoffs. So did you, Mark.
Yep.
As do I.
And yet, you know, before the season start, I don't feel any better now than I did then, even at 4-2, because the margin's so slim. Go beat the Broncos, committee.
That whole AFC South has that issue.
Don't they feel like the ultimate 10-6 team?
Yes.
No,
absolutely.
I feel like they're
Colts. Yes,
closer to 500 to me.
Well, 8-8 and 10-6 in the NFL is a razor-thin margin.
Broncos' defense is up to 5th in DVOA now.
They're good.
They are good, and I would think the Colts were ripe for an upset, but Noah Fant will find a way to blow it. I have never seen a player make as many mistakes in a two-month span.
That's your whipping boy.
Noah Fant, I think, is...
He's at killing Fant.
He's the Trojan horse sent to get Elway fired. He's like the Trojan Bronco, I think. I don't know. This guy makes... several mistakes every single week.
If our listeners are curious whether the intensity of Wes's antipathy for Noah Fant goes down at all watching games, no, it goes up.
Watching
the Broncos with Wes was special.
I kept thinking this guy's going to improve. He's a first-round pick. He'll get better. He gets worse every week.
All right, let's move on to Sunday Night Football. And this one hurts because we had the game of the year potentially set up, and perhaps it will still be a fun game because the Chiefs, at home in prime time, they're not going to roll over, but they're also not going to have Patrick Mahomes, who is out with that knee injury that he suffered last Thursday against the Broncos. So it will be Matt Moore, right?
We haven't officially. The Chiefs are trying to make
practicing.
They're playing
saying
it
that
smart.
He took some second team reps and that there's a chance. When you look at the video that they put out there, I mean, he's like kind of limping around there and not.
He ain't playing. Doing
I mean,
that.
We would not.
Rap sheet
in any way take a leap medically. We would not suggest
no.
that. Anything.
Rap sheet.
I would keep him out through the bye, though.
I'm going off Rap sheet, who says he's not playing.
Yeah. So. I think it's 3 weeks and then the bye, Greg. I think it's just safe just to keep him out through the bye.
I actually think he has one right before the bye. There we go. They might get Chris Jones back, though, which is a huge addition, and they might get Eric Fisher, their left tackle, back. So they have some good news.
This does feel like a game that the Packers should win. Wes, is there any way to spin it where you think the Chiefs pull this out if they don't have their MVP?
No. Okay. And I don't even think they pull it out even if Mahomes plays because he'll be so limited against Aaron Rodgers in the zone.
Well, I agree with that. This version of Mahomes, not healthy Mahomes.
Trusting the Chiefs' defense has suddenly flipped the switch on because they had one great night in Denver.
And right now, Aaron Rodgers is an elevated sports experience to watch him play. This is the Aaron Rodgers that we were watching 3 or 4 years ago when he was at the top of his game. And I'm willing to sacrifice the Cowboys, any other team, to keep this Packers team healthy the rest of the year. They will be my number one pick in every chance I get to for our Thursday exercises. This is the team. They're gaining strength. Romo was effusive in the way he described that Rodgers and LaFleur are getting used to each other. They're just now hitting
their
stride.
Aaron Jones is awesome.
Once Davante Adams gets back, good luck. He's doing this. Rodgers did this last week against the Raiders with a receiving core that had a combined 11 touchdowns in their career.
We are right back where we started with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers.
Mark is now getting
it. No, you know what, though? But the difference is that I can get behind the whole Mike Pettine experience. The team, to me, feels different.
It is.
Entirely than the operation from a few years ago where you're – you knew some drama was going to happen down the stretch. I thought they did give up a couple big pass plays against Oakland last week. Their defense is not Saints level.
They gave
it's
up
not
more yards
close
per
to
play
that.
Than any Packers in any Packers game in 4 years.
Right.
Darnell Savage is practicing fully this week and should be playing. He's been big in their back end, but was out the last 2 weeks.
And your boy Robert Tonyan's back. They do have a lot of good injury news. I like Tonyan.
All right, let's move to Monday Night Football. Here's a stinker. It's just a bad game. Watch it if you want. It's part of the NFL. You know, every NFL game is great.
By the way, it looked bad when they put the schedule together.
All right, it never looked great, but now it looks even worse. You got the Dolphins, 0-6, traveling to Heinz Field to face Mason Rudolph and the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers coming off the bye, looking to have a pulse in the AFC North, and you know, the Ravens seem right now to be the clear best team in that division. The Browns are an enigma at this point. The Steelers, though, if they can get this win and get to 3-4, at least stay on the periphery, but that's about as much as I could say about them.
I'm stunned to read the optimism from the Steelers beat writers about how this team is going to finish. Like Ed Bouchette, and there's one other one. Yeah, they were. I read a couple.
Dave Damashek.
They really see them as like, well, they're like a nine or ten win type of team. And I know James Conner looked better before the bye, but they also lost Stephon Tuitt, who along with T.J. Watt has been their best defensive player, and he's out for the season. We never really hit that one, and that is a huge loss for them.
I thought Tuitt was playing as well as any defensive end in the league, and this defense was really hitting its stride.
It's a great defense, or it's a very good defense.
I think the defense will still dominate this game. It's by far the best unit in this game. Even, you know, you're probably going to have Fitzpatrick on Fitzpatrick crime in this one.
T.J. Watt's still he's banged up, too.
I like that.
Little Minka versus Ryan.
Didn't even think of the Minka.
The revenge game?
Revenge game. I mean, this would, the ultimate revenge for the Dolphins would, although I guess they would hurt their own pick if they win, so that defeats the point.
That's revenge upon themselves.
Because in theory, you know, they could make the Steelers' record worse, which helps the pick they own. You know, they also have the Steelers' pick. Either way, they win.
Let me try to sell this game to fans. You know, in August when the Hall of Fame game or a preseason game's on and you miss football so much that you watch it and it could not mean less in the starters play one series or two or not at all. Well, enjoy every sandwich, as
Warren Zevon
once taught us.
Way more meaningful.
This is a football game that counts, and the Dolphins are playing better and the Steelers are trying to stay in the playoff race.
Here's one. I know you don't think the Dolphins are interesting. Here's the thing. No.
Who are you talking to?
You can talk to anybody on that.
But
every
yeah.
week he tries to get us interested in the Dolphins,
okay.
who aren't even interested
Here's
in
the thing,
themselves.
Though, and this has happened now. It's been getting closer every week. When they're getting close to a win, it's like Twitter starts buzzing. They're like, "Oh, is this the week they're really going to do?" Like if they win a game or if they get down to the last 5 minutes, it feels more monumental than if the Bengals do it.
Greg,
for some reason.
Twitter has stopped picking on Kirk Cousins for 20 seconds. Isn't a sell. Because that's all Twitter does is talk about Kirk Cousins all Sunday.
I'm going to be locked in from wire to wire in this game. I'm not going to take my eyes off it.
All right. So there you go. That is the preview of Week 8. Come back later tonight. Check in on your podcast download source of choice.
We apologize to Matt Moore. You know, didn't even get a mention here in his triumphant return. But we ran out of time late in the show.
He'll get it when he and Andy Reid exact revenge on the Packers.
Me and the Sizzler will talk Redskins at Vikings tonight in the Midi Pod, and then on Sunday in the flagship show, we'll go over the games that we just previewed. And one last note: someone from our team here at NFL Media, Andy Kenoff, who's a tape operator and a guy behind the scenes that works on this show and many others. He was in a motorcycle accident recently, and he suffered some serious injuries. He's going to be okay, but he's laid up right now, so we send our best wishes to Andy, because that sucks, and we hope that he gets well soon and gets back to work.
Get better.
Most importantly, back to work, Andy. Let's get you into the building.
Up.
That's what we need. But, yeah. Best wishes to Andy and his whole family.
Well, smart move by Andy, though, to stay on top of the league by listening to this podcast.
Smart. He wants the full around the NFL experience. All right, Andy.
Fan. Go Raiders.
Get well soon. All right, this is Dan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Rick Holiday behind the glass, Ryan Bartlett, the whole team back there. Hey, Christy. Till Sunday.